Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival for Thursday, second day of July, year of our Lord, 2015. My co-host is Melody Cederstrom, but she is missing in action today. She claims that there's some sort of a power outage in her part of the country, and therefore she cannot attend today's festivities. And so I will have to carry on all by myself. Let's start with the market report. Gold is down $3 to $1,166.30 per ounce. Silver is up 9 cents to $15.74 per ounce. Platinum is up $1 to $1,087. Palladium is down $4. To $696 per ounce. See what we've got over in the equities markets. You know, gold has had, this has been a, you know, an unpleasant week for gold. We've fallen 30 points, $30 on the price of gold this week or thereabouts. But part of the reason for that, and probably the primary reason, is that the U.S. dollar index, which was down near 94, the end of last week, is now up to 96.07. And as the dollar index goes up, the value of the dollar goes up, the price of gold goes down. This is evidence of inflation, or excuse me, deflation on the international level, because the dollar is gaining value relative to half a dozen foreign currencies, including the euro, the yen, the pound, the Canadian dollar, and I can't recall the others. But the point is, I think the Swiss, in any case, dollar is gaining value, and as it does, prices denominated in dollars tend to fall. And so we've got that teeter-totter effect going on, but the main problem gold has had for the past couple of weeks is that the dollar has gone into deflation, and it's been in deflation for over a year now. The U.S. dollar index has risen from 80 to almost 100 for a while. It's still up something like 20% compared to where it was a year ago. This hasn't been good for gold. But it can't be good for the government either, because the government is the world's biggest debtor, and deflation is practically suicidal. It poses a mortal threat to all debtors because under terms of deflation, you end up paying off your debts with more expensive dollars. You borrow $100,000 from the bank. If you borrow it during a period of inflation, when you pay off the $100,000, the dollars are worth substantially less than the $100,000 that you borrowed. You still pay off $100,000, but it has less purchasing power. It means that debtors are enriched by inflation. Inflation encourages people to go into debt. But the opposite is true when we go into deflation. When the dollar becomes more valuable during a period of deflation, it means that debtors must pay off their debts with more expensive dollars. And again, it's a little confusing because they're paying off $100,000. Yeah. But it would the $100,000 that you pay off as compared to the original $100,000 you borrowed is more expensive. It's more valuable. And the result is, the net result, even though it doesn't show up on the books, people repaying debt during periods of deflation are paying more money than they borrowed. And that tends to push them into bankruptcy. And the point to this, and we've talked about it in the past, but the point to this is that the federal government is the biggest debtor in the world. And insofar as deflation is terrible for debtors, the government can't continue to allow the dollar to be deflated. I am amazed to some degree that they've allowed it to go on for over a year. But in the end, they have to have inflation. If they don't, it'll cause the dollar, the government, to default on its loans. It'll put us into a position analogous to that of Greece. But we wait to see when will government begin to cause inflation, if it can cause inflation. And if it can't, then the government's in big trouble. And if it causes inflation, the price of gold's going to go up. If it doesn't cause significant inflation and allows deflation to continue, the government debts will become overwhelming. Government will be unable to pay all of its debts. The government may be put under enough stress where even the dollar dies. You know, you can't, if the dollar will be under so much stress that the government, ultimately, if the dollar has to be protected, if the government has to be protected, they have to produce inflation or perhaps even hyperinflation. But the government can't withstand deflation for an endless period of time. They can deal with inflation. They can deal with that almost forever. You know, you can take the dollar and you can, we've seen, you hear the ads on the program, where the value of the dollar has lost 95% or more of its purchasing power in the last 30, 40 years. But it doesn't matter on one level. We can take the dollar and turn it into where its value is only a nickel due to inflation, and the dollar still functions. We can inflate further and drop the purchasing power of the dollar down to one penny as compared to what it was in 1971. Doesn't matter. Dollar can still function. We can take that dollar and we can drop the purchasing power from a penny down to a tenth of a penny. And the dollar can still function. But they can't deal. That's inflation. It's like the Zimbabwean dollar. It went through billions of percent of inflation and continued to function poorly, but it continued to function for some time until finally people lost confidence in it. And when they lose confidence in the dollar, then it's gone. All right? then it's bye-bye, at which point in time price of gold is going to increase dramatically, if not before. Any case, let me get on with the market. I'm just saying my main point is U.S. dollar has been up over the last week on the U.S. dollar index. Gold has been down, and that's basically what we're looking at. Dow Jones is down 23 points today to 17,735. NASDAQ is down 3 points to 5,010. New York Stock Exchange is down 0.16, which is a triviality, to 10,858. Crude oil, down 32 cents per barrel to $56.64 per barrel. That's consistent with the dollar gaining value. The price of other things would fall as the dollar gains value. Where are we? Let's see what else we've got to talk about here without melody. Here's one that I'll talk about. Let's just start this. This is an interesting story. This is from Bloomberg. And the headline is 2.8 million pot munchies and other numbers from Colorado's first year of retail marijuana. It's been a year now that Colorado has been able to sell marijuana. You've been able to smoke marijuana and purchase it legally in Colorado. And here are some of the reports. Bloomberg is telling us some of the numbers. Colorado's Grand Maritime our marijuana retail agreement resulted in almost 20 tons of pot sold to recreational users in 2014. It was the first year of legal recreational sales in the state, thus the first time statewide retail market for marijuana could be quantified. Before Colorado, no government in the U.S. had ever allowed retail sales. The state had previously allowed medical pot, which has low taxes but requires a doctor's prescription. Recreational marijuana sales, however, which became legal in January 2014, opened the door to any buyer age 21 and over. Retail sales carry a heavy tax burden. Colorado collected $63 million in tax revenue and an additional $13 million in licensing and fees on $699 million of combined medical and recreational pot sales in 2014. The point is, government of Colorado is making some money off the sale of pot. That should be a lot of states under current circumstances. They're looking at that and they're saying, you know, we're strapped financially. We could sure use some more tax revenue. And so what they're essentially doing is they're saying, well, why don't we compete with those people that are selling drugs on the street corners? They're making a bunch of money and we're not getting any of it. And so they've legalized pot so they can go into the drug dealing business themselves and start catching, and they're going to make a tax on it. And just like a drug dealer, drug pusher, government's now pushing certain drugs, or at least pot, and they're making a profit off of it. They're generating some tax revenue. Now, other states are looking at this, and they're thinking, we really need the money. And why should the drug dealers keep all the money they make selling pot when the government could get a percentage? So they've legalized, at least in California, and more will think about doing so. Now, the interesting thing about this, there's some other points on this also. One market where retail stores, all told, retailers sold almost 40,000 pounds of pot in 2014. There are 2,850,733 edibles sold at retail stores. They're using pot in things like gummy bears and different products, and you can eat the pot. Right? That's also part of the market. One market where retail stores have dominated medical dispensaries is the sale of marijuana-infused edible products, which include gummy bears, tapenade, and, yes, brownies. Sales of food made with marijuana helped retail sales of edibles surpass those of medical dispensaries by April. December saw 360,000 marijuana-infused items sold across the state, making it the single busiest month of the year. Colorado said that the trend suggests that retail marijuana products are viable products for retail consumers. So it's not just selling pot that you can smoke. They're selling pot that you can eat. All right? This is a drug whose time has come, perhaps. Pot is what's for dinner. Understand? And for breakfast, too. Snap, crackle, pop, rice stoners. The big question here. Now, this is where it really gets interesting. Colorado has legalized pot. Okay? The government has argued for years that pot is an entry-level drug. They've kind of admitted that it wasn't all that harmful by itself, but they've said, look, you start smoking pot, it's only a question of time before you start doing cocaine or crack or heroin or whatever else. And so in order to protect us from the serious drugs, government had to criminalize less serious drugs. Well, we're going to have a chance to test that theory out in Colorado. We are going to find out whether or not the sale of illegal drugs in Colorado has increased or decreased since marijuana was legalized. Given that marijuana is legalized, and I know it's a different drug from heroin and crack and cocaine, and the different drugs have different effects, and there's some people that prefer some drugs to another, whether they're legal or they're not. But I'm wondering if, by legalizing marijuana, the government actually reduced the amount of illegal drugs that are being sold in Colorado. Are people who are inclined to do drugs, are they satisfied with pot? And they say, why take a chance on doing heroin, cocaine, or crack? Now, I know it's a different drug and it's a different kind of high. Those are different drugs with different kinds of high. But just the same, I'm wondering how many people are going to sit back and say, I don't need those other drugs. I'm going to deal with just marijuana because at least I can't get thrown in jail. And the implication here, this question, don't have an answer. I mean, we'll watch and see if marijuana, they've legalized marijuana, if it increases the public's use in Colorado of other drugs, then the push to legalize marijuana in other parts of the country is going to be restricted, inhibited, diminished. But if it turns out they do a study and say, damn, by legalizing marijuana, you'll never guess what happened. We've cut the use of heroin, cocaine, crack by 20%. Well, if the numbers turn out like that, there are going to be people around the country, governments are going to start screaming to legalize, state governments will start screaming to legalize pot. Legalization of pot might be one of the most effective devices to reduce the use of other hard and prohibited drugs. So, what do you think? Does that strike you as a credible possibility? We'll have to watch and see, but it will undoubtedly come out. Might be another year before we hear that kind of information. But we're going to find out, does legalizing pot cause people to say, hey, I don't have time to do coke, crack, or heroin. I'll just do the pot, and at least I won't go to prison. We're going to slow down the other drugs? I think they might. We'll watch and see. I'm Alfred Adisk. This is Financial Survival. I'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethreews.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival. Melody's not here today. Her power's out at her location. And so I am doing this program all by myself. Here's an article. We'll talk a little about politics during the segment. Here's an article from the Washington Times. Admission of Hillary Clinton's classified emails opens door for feds to seize her servers. Now, this is an interesting article because it doesn't give me enough information where I know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. You know, is the glass half empty, half full? What is this? The State Department on Wednesday conceded the 24 of Hillary Rodham Clinton's emails did contain classified information, a fact that could trigger U.S. policy that authorizes the government to take control of her private server and sanitize the contents. In other words, Hillary Clinton's email had some stack of it, 55,000 items, if I understand correctly, that were kept on her private server. They've identified some of them that included classified information. Under government law or policy, the government has a right to seize the servers that contain this classified information. The purpose of the seizure is to protect the classified information from being revealed to the public and or foreign adversaries or whatever. But is this good or bad for Hillary? The procedures are spelled out by the National Security Agency's Special Panel on Controlling Leaked Secrets called the Committee for National Security Systems. It published a policy securing data and handling spillage events that fits the case of Mrs. Clinton's unauthorized private server kept at her home while she was Secretary of State according to the retired officer's reading of the regulation. States the policy, quote, malicious attacks are alarming. In other words, the attacks from China, for example, that try to hack into our computer systems to see what information they can gain. Malicious attacks are alarming, but more often spillages occur from unintended user error or negligence. Right? They're saying we lose more information by accident than we do by intent, or at least we expose more classified information by accident or negligence than we do by foreign hackers, non-governmental hackers trying to break into the system. Hillary Clinton's server has classified information and should be taken by the government and sanitized, wiped clean, or destroyed. Now, does that mean that Hillary is in deeper trouble as her email are revealed to the public? In other words, if the government seizes this her servers, will the email be, will all 55,000 of her email, will they be revealed to the public except for the ones that contain classified information? Or will the government simply destroy the servers, wipe them clean? If the government takes control of the servers and wipes them clean and destroys public access to her email, will that help Hillary to keep her email secret? Will the government destroy all 55,000? And the article doesn't tell us, but it's an interesting question. So is this glass half empty or half full? If the government seizes Hillary's servers, is that good for the public or is it good for good for Hillary? We'll watch and see. There's another one from the Washington Times. Joe Biden likely to join 2016 White House race next month, top fundraiser says. Vice President Joseph R. Biden's team is putting out the word that he's leaning in favor of joining the presidential race next month. That would be August, according to a prominent Democrat fundraiser. The vice president's entrance would dramatically shake up the Democratic contest, confronting front-runner Hillary Rodham Clinton with a formidable opponent who is equally well-known across the country and poised to tap a network of major donors. I'm not convinced that Biden is a formidable opponent. I mean, Biden has come off as something of a, at times a little ridiculous. He's kind of amusing. I don't know that he's a bad guy or an incompetent guy, but he does make remarks once in a while that are, I'm sure he gets his wrist slapped over them. And he would make an interesting president, because unless they sewed his lips shut, he would be certain to make remarks from time to time that riled some people and fascinated and amused others, and it would be interesting to have him as a president, but I don't know that he's competent for the position. I don't see Biden as a formidable opponent, but at least I don't see him. You could say Biden was a formidable opponent in the context of the current field of Democrats. You might be able to say that because he has been vice president. He's got lots of name recognition and so on. And I don't think he's individually formidable in terms of being particularly well qualified to hold the office of president. But he's as well known as Hillary Clinton, or very nearly. And he didn't have anything to do with Benghazi, and he doesn't have a treasure trove of email that are sitting on servers someplace that may or may not go public before this is all over. So he doesn't have a lot of Hillary's baggage, and he is as well known. And although Hillary's got, she's the front runner at the moment, you know, Biden could pick up the official Democrat Party mantle. And I don't think the Democrat Party would have a problem supporting him. And in the final analysis, the truth of the matter is, I think that Biden is more electable than Hillary. I think Hillary has so much negative baggage with her and the rest of that. She's a front runner at the moment, and yet she looks like a long shot to me. I don't think it's highly probable that Hillary's going to win the next election, next presidential election. In any case, according to this article, they have given increasingly strong signals that Biden is going to throw his hat into the ring. According to one of the people quoted, I'm as confident as I can be that he will be entering the race. So, this is another one of these questions. Will Vice President Biden enter the presidential race because he thinks he can beat Hillary Clinton in the primaries? Does he think he's a strong enough candidate to beat Hillary Clinton in the primaries? Or is he entering the presidential race because he believes that one way or another, Hillary Clinton will be forced to quit the presidential campaign due to her problems with Benghazi and or her computer servers and or whatever else turns up? Now, the fundraising for their charity, whatever it is, raising billions of dollars here and there, hundreds of millions at least, maybe billions, I don't recall exactly. But raising money under circumstances where it appears clear that in return she was selling favors as Secretary of State, and they'd send her husband out to speak someplace, and they'd pay him $500,000, and he was ostensibly collecting a speaking fee when what he was actually doing was functioning as a bag man for Hillary. If you wanted to bribe Hillary, you had to give X number of dollars to Bill. Let him speak for a while and then send him on his way. That's the way it was apparently. I mean, that was the way it was apparently being done. It remains to be seen if that allegation is completely accurate or not, but that's the way it appears to be. Can these allegations continue to come out until without affecting Hillary, or are they going to doom her campaign? Or are there people already on the inside working with Hillary that have seen her lose heart? Has she already begun to say, oh my gosh, what have I done? You know, maybe this running for president is more trouble than it's worth. So why is Biden running? Does he think he can beat Hillary? Or does he think that Hillary is going to disappear? Here's another one from Yahoo Politics. The headline is, Christie can't win New Jersey. Does that matter? Here's the bad news for Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey. He embarks on a presidential campaign with hardly any support among primary voters. He might not even make it on stage for the first debate because, unlike 4 years ago, when conservative donors were begging Christie to offer himself up as not Mitt Romney, there are at least 15 other Republicans vying for the position. Here's the good news for Christie, if you want to be half glass full about it. At least he's not running for re-election for governor. Because with a 30% approval rating in New Jersey, Christie is now less popular in his home state than his predecessor, John Corzine, whom he beat pretty much by just showing up and having a pulse. So here we have Christie. He's running for election. He's running for the president. As governor of New Jersey, even though he probably couldn't get reelected in New Jersey at this moment, he probably couldn't win a primary in New Jersey, in his home state. And yet he's running for president here in the next in 2016. That's certainly the triumph of hope over experience. If he can't even win his home state, can he win a national election? And I'm not saying that it's impossible to do, but I'm saying his nose will be rubbed in the fact that he can't even carry his own state. They won't let up on that. All right, his opponents will constantly remind the voters that Christie can't even carry New Jersey. How can he carry the rest of the country? Truth is, he might be able to. He might be able to strike a chord with the rest of the country where people said, yeah, I think I'll vote for Christie. But his opponents will constantly hammer him that he can't carry his home state, that he only has a 30% approval rating, that he's less liked in New Jersey than John Corzine, who was, the implications, Corzine was, he was perhaps more honorable than a mafia don. Al Capone. But Corzine did not appear. There were more than a few allegations and rumors and even evidence that Corzine was a long ways from being an honorable man. And the people of New Jersey, as much as they disliked Corzine, they disliked Christie even more. Can he be elected in 2016? Can he even be nominated by the Republican Party? And you look at this and you think to yourself, I don't know, I'm reminded of the song Send in the Clowns. You know, isn't it rich? Aren't we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Some of you will remember the song Send in the Clowns. It seems like we've got more than a fair share of clowns who may be running for the Republican nomination. There's another one running for the Republican nomination, which I don't think is a clown. That's Donald Trump, and the Washington Times reports Donald Trump dumped by Macy's. He says, retailer, NBC, support illegal aliens. All right? Illegal immigration, in fact. That's what the headline says. Donald Trump said Wednesday that Macy's and NBC support illegal immigration after the department store chain announced that it was cutting ties to the 2016 GOP presidential candidate. Mr. Trump, though, said in a statement that he is cutting ties with Macy's because the pressure the retailer recently came under to drop his line of merchandise over controversial remarks he made about immigrants. NBC also parted ways with Mr. Trump. Now, Trump is suing NBC. He has a deal with them for beauty pageant, and they've decided, and they said, nope, we're not going to honor the deal, and Trump is suing them for $500 million. Depending on how this goes, NBC may wind up funding Trump's presidential candidacy. The problem, all of this is that Trump suggested that Mexico is sending us their drug dealers, their criminals, their least educated. He said, look, we're not getting a benefit out of this thing. We shouldn't be taking these illegal aliens. And he's being slapped around for that. And there's one of the things we're going to watch and see is Macy's has stood up and said, we're not going to support Trump because he said nasty things about the illegal aliens. Well, that's their choice. And it may be they can, business is business. And if they want to cut ties with Mr. Trump, apparently they can. But it's also true that the people in the body politic who are watching this situation unfold, they can also cut ties with Trump if they care to over remarks he's made about the illegal aliens, or they could cut ties with Macy's. They could cut ties with NBC. It may well be that before we're done, they're going to find out that what they've actually done by cutting ties with Trump, it may be that they've increased his popularity in the polls right now. He jumped from 3% to 12%. He jumped 9% in just basically a week after he announced his candidacy. It's going to be interesting to see if his popularity rises another 2-5% because of his scuffle with NBC and with Macy's. It's going to be interesting to see if Macy's loses business. People who like Trump say, screw it, I'm not going to buy any more stuff from Macy's. People who like Trump may just say, I'm not watching NBC anymore. There are interesting things happening here, and they are not, and the results are not obvious. You know, it was almost stupid for Macy's and NBC to get into this, but they did, and we'll watch and see how it unfolds. We'll take a break now for some more commercials. I'm Alfred Adisk, and when we return, we'll talk about, what do we talk about? A dirty little secret. Let's talk about the dirty little secret in the third segment of the program. Please stay tuned.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival. Melody is absent today. She's had a power problem at her home and office, and so she shut down. She can't make a connection to get in to do the program today. At least that's what she claims. I think she's out walking on the beach with her dog, having a good time, and leaving me to carry the ball all by myself. I've got an article here called "The Dirty Little Secret Advisors Won't Tell You." Now, this is amusing. Mark, this is from MarketWatch.com. Most investment success any advisors is due overwhelmingly to luck rather than skill. You know, when people like myself sit on programs like this, we have to be careful not to be giving investment advice, right? We've got to speak in generic terms. We can't, by law, we can't tell specific individuals what to invest in or what to abandon and so on, unless we are certified financial planners or registered agents of the stock markets or whatever. And it's not a big problem, but it's something you have to be aware of. Well, here's an article that says UCLA finance professor Brad Cornell has proposed a simple formula for gauging the relative investment importance of skill and luck. Upon applying that formula to a large sample of mutual funds, he found that 92% of the differences in those funds' annual returns were attributable to random chance. What that means in practice, top right performance in a given year is rarely repeated the next year. People get credit for it, and you'll hear people, here's the guy who, he's the one who predicted the 2008 financial collapse. All right? And so he's to be believed. But what they're saying, it was just a certain amount of dumb luck, at least 92% of the time. Huh? Now, if it's only dumb luck that really sets the majority of the difference, there's some skill involved. They're saying 8% of these 8% of the successes are due to real skill, but 92% of the successes are due to dumb luck. Well, then what is the value of financial advice? Right? If we were to tell you this is exactly the stock you should buy, this is the stock you should not buy, and so on, and these are the bonds and so on like that. Why would the government be upset about people offering financial advice if 92% of the time that advice is based more on luck? If it succeeds and is accurate, it's based on luck more so than skill. It's this kind of question that we can ask this. We can ask this perhaps about doctors, certainly about lawyers. To what extent are these people right because they're skillful, and to what extent are they right because they're lucky? Huh? But in any case, in the markets, they say 90% of the differences in those annual funds were attributed to random chance. That means dumb luck. And it also means that if you had a great year this year and you guessed everything correctly and you want to take credit for it and sell your book and sell your publication, the rest of that sort of thing, next year you're not likely to do as well because it was just dumb luck you did well in the first year. Right? You're not likely to duplicate your performance. It's like going to a casino and rolling five times in a row on the craps table and coming back and writing a book on how to roll seven every time at the craps table. The truth is you may never roll seven again all your life. This is the sort of thing that's on one hand a little bit discouraging. You would wish that there was more skill involved. But it does tell you, and what they're really talking about here are the advisors that say, this is what you should do, this is not what you should do. What's the lesson in all of this? You should listen to these advisors, or at least you can listen to them if you care to. Just as you can listen to me. But you have to take it all with salt. You have to do your due diligence, and we can suggest things, and we have our own particular slant and pitch, one thing and another, and we say this is what we think is right and wrong. But you're going to have to make up your own mind. You're going to have to sit back and say, well, this is what I want to do. I've looked at the possibilities. I'm going to invest this way. I'm going to divest from certain vehicles that I've invested in the past. I'm going to invest in certain vehicles that I now prefer, or maybe I'm going to hold. Or maybe I'm going to abandon all my investments and just stuff the cash in my mattress. But you can't just be impressed by the reputation of whatever guru you might be following. Right? The fact that somebody predicted accurately that 2008 was going to be a great recession. This is no more significant than one of the psychics that we see on the National Enquirer every year, and we compare, and one of them says, ha-ha, I predicted that they would find a pyramid on other planets and moons. And they have. They've just turned up pyramids. Well, it's a stupid kind of prediction, and it's more than likely just a matter of dumb luck rather than real psychic ability. If 92% of investment gains are based on luck, then it's fair to compare stock and bond markets to Las Vegas casinos. We can reasonably wonder if our markets can be legitimately compared to casinos. If that's the case, who is the house? If 92% of the gains are based on luck and only 8% on skill, who is making the real profits in the markets? I don't have an answer for that, but you know what? What an extraordinary story! 92% of the successes in the markets are based on luck, and it follows that 92% of the failures are based on luck, bad luck. So it really is a casino environment when you get into the markets. Again, what's that tell us? Get back to fundamentals. You're going to have to be an investor rather than a speculator. The speculators are the ones that are in, they get in, they get out. Their idea is to make a fast profit this week, this month, within the next 5 minutes. Get in, buy right now. I think now's the time to buy. We'll buy, I'll sell it in 5 minutes, and I'll make $5,000 on who knows, $500,000 investment. Speculators, they're gamblers. And like all gamblers, ultimately their success or failure depends on their luck. If you want to get away from that luck, right, in the sense that you don't want to be dependent on being lucky or unlucky, how do you do it? And the answer has to be that you become an investor rather than a speculator. And the principal difference between the investor and the speculator is the time frame. Speculator is in there, he's just in there for minutes or hours or days or week. The investor is in there for years. The investor trying to look at the fundamentals, and if you can accurately perceive those fundamentals, it's like grabbing, it's like perceiving the gravity, all right? It's like Isaac Newton, the apple falls on his head out of the tree, and all of a sudden he realizes, oh my gosh, there's a force of gravity. That's a fundamental, huh? If you can grab these fundamentals yourself and perceive them yourself, then you can make long-term bets that have a very high probability of success. If you don't perceive those fundamentals, if you don't care about those fundamentals, and you can't if you're a speculator. Speculators don't really care about the fundamentals per se. What's happening right now, right now, right now? Who is going to win the horse race? There's a two-minute race, a three-minute race, whatever it's going to take. The horse is going around the track. Which horse is going to win in the next couple of minutes? That's not about fundamentals. That's about a certain amount of random chance and dumb luck as to who gets the break out of the gate and who gets closest to the rail. And there's a bunch of variables in it, but it's just gambling. If you want to get away from the gambling, you look at the fundamentals. You stop concerning yourself. I mean, you can't stop concerning yourself on what the value of your investment is going to be tomorrow or next week or a month from now. It's human nature to pay attention. But if you're going to be an investor and you've figured your fundamentals out properly, you're going to sit back and say, well, I don't care what it's going to be a week from now or a month from now. Here's what I think is going to happen a year from now or 3 years from now. Here's a long-term perspective. Now I'm an investor, and I don't pay attention to the daily ups and downs that drive the speculators nuts. Also fascinate them, obsess them, just like watching to see whether the ball is coming up red or green on the roulette wheel. You can get sufficiently involved and even obsessed with the markets where, you know, you're betting from moment to moment, but that's all you're doing. And that's why luck prevails. The investors aren't based on luck. They are based on, and it may even be, that if they talk about it without knowing more about the study that was conducted by this man from UCLA, Cornell, it may be that if we look at the 8% of investments that are based on skill, that are successful, I'd really like to know the time frame. The article doesn't say. But I'm going to make you a bet, seeing as we're talking about gambling and dumb luck. I'm going to make you a bet that if 90% of the gains in the markets are based on luck and only 8% on skill, there's at least a high probability that the 92% of gains that are based on luck are the gains that are earned by speculators in a very short time frame. Huh? While the 8% that are based on skill are based on the gains earned by investors who take the time to figure out what they want, kind of like Warren Buffett, before they move. And then they move big and they hold. They hold for long term. I'll make you a bet. Don't know that it's true, but the 8% of success, I'll bet most of that skill is based on investors. The 92% that's dumb luck, those are the speculators. We are down to the last couple of minutes in the program. Let's see, trying to see one more article. How much does Greece owe to international creditors? This is from Reuters. Turns out the it owes its official lenders $242 billion. That's about €243 billion, which is about $271 billion. Now, we've gone through all of this stress with Greece, and it becomes comical at times. But it's interesting to bear in mind that during quantitative easing 3, the Federal Reserve was injecting about $80 billion a month into the economy. That means that just over 3 months of quantitative easing would solve the Greek financial crisis. That wouldn't be a big strain. In theory, the government of the United States could have stepped up and said, look, you guys are squabbling over $243 billion. It's 3 months of quantitative easing. We can pay that. That's not a problem. Here, now go on out and try not to make any more mistakes about lending too much to Greece or borrowing too much from your creditors and so on. The fact that our government or other central bank, European Central Bank or the IMF or whoever, they didn't cough up the 243 billion euros that was needed to solve the Greek problem. There's two implications. One is that Greece's problem, it was never as dire as the news media led us to believe. There won't be significant contagion. The global financial system won't be collapsed by the Greek default. And therefore, no one in a position of authority or power or wealth really cares to help bail out Greece. We were never in any real jeopardy, and all the reports to the contrary were just so much hot air and hyperbole. The second possibility is the Greek problem is dire. It's as dire as the news media has led us to believe in the past, but the entities, like the Federal Reserve, that might otherwise be expected to help Greece and thereby prevent a global and U.S. economic collapse are already too broke to be of assistance. Do you see what I'm talking about here? We've got a situation where either Greece's not problem was never as big as they led us to believe, and I think that's the case, or the people who in theory could have helped resolve the problem are too broke to do so, which means the whole global financial system is sitting on the edge, very close to some sort of a significant breakdown. We'll watch and see what happens. Melody and I should be back tomorrow. Want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.